And you people are funny. When I look at this side starts singing. When I turn my head away, they stop from this side. You only sing when I look at you. Oh, well. Can't have everything.
That's true.
I welcome you with all my heart and with all my being. It's good to see you all here, every one of you. In 1947, I went to Ramana Ashram. After spending around 3 days talking with Ramana, I settled down with the devotees in the hall. And I used to sit at the right side of the hall against the wall, watching all the people come in. They had devotees, disciples, and seekers. The devotees were always the same. They never said much. They were immersed in the self. The devotees and the seekers quarreled with each other. I recall a particular Indian who was very quarrelsome with a disciple. And he used to find fault with everybody. He would go to Ramana and say, so-and-so is doing this, so-and-so is doing that. And Ramana would tell him, remember the reason of why you came here. And keep silent. The reason, of course, was to find the self and not to interfere with anybody else. But there were all kinds of incidents going on. Sikhs came, Hindus, Westerners, Buddhists, Zen Buddhists. People were practicing Hatha Yoga. All these things were happening in front of Ramana. But it didn't faze Ramana one bit. I recall Westerner. I'm trying to think of his name. Henry Wells from Scotland. He apparently had read a lot of books about Ramana, and this was his first visit. He came into the hall, and I was watching this. Ran over to Ramana and prostrated himself on his stomach. And started going crazy. His feet were shaking, and he was chanting. The devotees wanted to pick him up, and Ramana said, let him stay. When he came out of it, he told Ramana, at last I have found you. You are my father, my mother, my son, my daughter, my friend. And Ramana just smiled at him. And I said to myself, and I was only 18 years old, I said to myself, someone is this enthusiastic, let's see what happens, if it lasts. The days went by, And he kept frustrating himself every day for about a month. Then he finally stopped. And he sat down like everybody else. And after about 2 months, he started looking around the room at everybody. And he started complaining that this wasn't right. That wasn't right. After about 4 months of being there, he donated $40,000 to the ashram. And I'm just watching all these things going on. About 6 months of being there, he started to find fault with the management. At that time, Ramana's brother was managing the ashram. He started to whisper to the other disciples, "Of course, the devotees had nothing to do with this. It was the disciples and the seekers." He started spreading rumors. He hardly ever talked to me. I guess I was too young. He was about 45 years old. On about the 7th month, he came over to me one day and he asked me outside the ashram, "Do you think Ramana is really enlightened?" So I just smiled at him, I didn't answer, and walked away. And he started getting devotees to fight against each other and rebel against the rules of the ashram. On about the 8th month, he saw me again and he tells me, "Do you think it's right for a man to stay naked like this? Let's buy him some clothes and dress him up." So when Westerners come, they won't be frightened. So I told him what Ramana said. "Remember the reason for why you came." And this went on. A couple of days later, I didn't see him in the hall. Second day passed, I didn't see him. The third day passed, I didn't see him. On the 4th day, I inquired what happened to him. And the house guest he was living with said, "Oh, Henry packed his suitcase and went back to Scotland." And nobody ever heard from him again. The point of the story is this. If you realize the reason why you came, you will be interested in one thing: awakening. And that will dominate your life. Nothing else will. You will not be concerned what somebody else is doing. And you will be at peace with yourself and everybody else. Everything is purity anyway. Everything is karmic. So what's going to happen will happen whether you like it or not. So why get insulted? Why get your feelings hurt? Be at peace. It's interesting, this morning I was looking through a magazine. And I found an article by a devotee who lived at the ashram for quite a while, talking about the same subject. Mary, would you like to read it? Now listen carefully to this. Can you see?
Yes, I can see fine. It's called Mind the Business for Which You Have Come. All events in life are shaped according to the divine plan. What is bound to happen will happen. What is not to happen cannot be brought about by any human effort. On this point, Ramana was quite categorical. When Devaraja Mudaliar questioned him as to whether only important things in one's life, such as major occupation or profession alone, are predetermined, or even trifling acts, Ramana replied, "Everything is predetermined. One of the purposes of birth is to go through certain experiences which have been marked out in the karmic unfoldment of this life. The whole program is chalked out. This would apparently be a dampener to all effort, for one would be puzzled as to what the responsibility of man is. Is he an automaton of karmic forces? Where do his free will and effort come in?" Ramana points out that there is another, deeper purpose to life. That is to search and find out the truth for oneself. He would say that the only useful purpose of life is to turn within and realize there's nothing else to do. Ramana would therefore constantly dim into everyone the fact that the ultimate truth is Sakshat, immediately available here and now. When Natananda Nanda asked Ramana, "Is it possible for everyone to know directly without doubt what exactly is one's true nature?" Prompt came the reply, "Undoubtedly it is possible. The ultimate truth is so simple," Ramana would say. "It is nothing more than abiding in one's own state. This is the essential message of all religions and creeds. Leaving aside the automatic course of our lives, regulated by the Creator according to His law, one's duty is to channel effort to be self-aware. Steadfastness of purpose is in treading the inner path through vigilant self-inquiry. On such inquiry as to the source of the individual, the inquirer merges in the conscious source. The inner odyssey is seldom smooth sailing. Full many a delusion would wean one away. For instance, people would go to Sri Ramana Ashram to breathe its rarefied atmosphere. While there, instead of surrendering to his flowing grace, they would get involved in the happenings of the ashram management. Ramana used to jovially remark of some visitors, "On their first visit to Sri Ramana Ashram, they seem to be all right. On the second visit, they discover that the ashram is not properly run. On the third visit, they start giving advice. On the fourth, they know best how to run the place. And on the fifth, they discover that the management is not responsive. On the sixth, they suggest that the present staff should walk out, leaving the ashram to them. They would thus get bogged down in things which are irrelevant for the search." When such people complained, Ramana would say, "Mind the business for which you have come. This would apply, of course, not only to their visit to Sri Ramana Ashram, but also to the purpose of human life itself. One has to constantly keep before the mind's eye the liberating purpose, the only worthwhile one of freeing oneself from the karmic chains by discovering the hidden truth. Ramana would even seemingly chide if one failed to pursue one's own sadhana, but was time thinking and talking with others. A devotee once told Ramana, "I have been here for many years. People got into samadhi. I close my eyes for a minute and my mind travels round the world." Ramana replied, "Why do you think about others? Let them meditate, sleep, or snore. Look to yourself. Whenever your mind goes astray, bring it back to the quest." Once Bhagavan told a devotee, "You wake up, look at the mirror. It shows the growth to be got rid of. Instead of wasting time, start shaving." Similarly, heaven knows when the allotted time would end. Hence, not to seek the truth by vigilant self-inquiry is truly suicidal. Many would like to blame their circumstances for their indolence and laziness and failure to pursue self-inquiry. Ramana would ask, "Why depend on that which is not in your hands? Go ahead with the business which is in your hands, under your control, leaving aside what you cannot do anything about. Proper utilization of God-given freedom of turning the mind is what is needed all the time. As for adverse circumstances in life, of which everyone has a bellyful, while sympathizing, Ramana would at the same time say, you are always free not to be affected by the pleasure and pain consequent on action. The peace has to be taken out of the event by an attitudinal change which neutralizes it." Sometimes Ramana would advise leaving things to the sure hands of the Sadguru and to stick single-mindedly to the effort which would make one self-aware. Ramana would say, "Why don't you do what the first-class railway passenger does? He tells the guard his destination, locks the door, and goes to sleep. The rest is done by the guard. If you can trust your guru as much as you trust the railway guard, it will be good enough to make you reach the destination." Again, when someone pestered him for the darshan of Sri Krishna, he said, "Why don't you leave the Shastakara of Krishna to Krishna? We also have the pointed advice given by him to Ganapati Muni. Remain all the time steadfast in the heart. God will determine the future for you and accomplish the work. What is to be done will be done at the proper time. Don't worry. Abide in the heart. Life becomes meaningful if we joyously tread the inward path, remembering that ours is to do the vichara, and it is for the inner force to do the rest. Then bliss is not the end product to be found on reaching the goal, but is felt all along the homeward, heartward journey."
There's another article prior, previous to that, before that.
Before that?
Yeah. It's a short one.
Oh, the purpose of life?
Yes, let Jay read that.
It's a little one.
One little bit.
Purpose of Life by Lucia Osborne, wife of would that be?
Authorized one's what?
Those whose spiritual effort is in the right direction get progressively closer to their perfect self, become more peaceful, happier, and are increasingly liked and helped by those with whom they come into contact. Some of the negative category will attend rigorously only to externals, like clothing and pure food, which will not help them much if it combines with egocentric selfish behavior and possessiveness. They will do anything to be able to possess a few more things of scarcely any importance. They do not realize the harm they do to themselves, getting deeper into samsara with all its problems and suffering, away from realizing the glorious, peaceful joy in their heart. This pertains also to those in positions of power who treat the people with whom they deal without goodwill, sincerity, or even truthfulness. They will usually be disliked, have a few friends, if any. Those who associate with them will either have some affinity or feel sorry for them, combined usually with reluctance to forego some convenience or other. Not a particularly spiritual motive. One might say that a misguided seeker forfeits the great opportunity of gaining the greatest fortune possible for a human being. The purpose of life is to return to the source. The source is mysterious, glorious, peaceful joy, which is God in everybody's heart. This is realization. We do not gain it. It is always there in the heart. Only the obstructions, or the vasanas, have to be removed to reveal it.
Thank you, Jay. Any questions about that before we go on? Everybody understand it perfectly?
Just keep your eye on the ball.
Right. Okay, let's play a song and we'll carry on.
Shoot straight.
Hello again. It's good to be with you. I talk to many people during the week, both on the telephone and in person. I speak to Zen Buddhists, Hindus, Americans, all kinds of people. And 80% tell me they're enlightened. Most of them tell me they've experienced the void. Some say they've seen lights. Some say they hear certain sounds. I'm going to say, what do you think? Sorry remark. Somebody has to be present to experience these things. As long as somebody is present, and somebody is present, or you're not able to tell me about it, then there's no enlightenment. Find out who is present and hold on to that you. Because you were present to experience the void. You were present to experience the light or the sound. Who is that you? Find out. Hold on to that you. Hold on to I. I was present to experience the void. As long as I am present, I cannot possibly be enlightened. Because I still exist. It is like a movie theater. Well, let's take a stage theater. Stage play. Where the lights shine on the players and on the audience. And when the play is over, the audience and the actors both leave, but the light still shines, even though it shines in nothing. So the empty theater is the void, but the light is still shining in the void, as well as on the people. A better example is, we see a room filled with furniture. The eyes look and they see. Then somebody turns off the light. The eyes are still there, but they don't see anything. That's how the void is compared to the sphere. There has to be a sphere to see the void. Who is that seer? And you find out by simply inquiring, who am I? Where did I come from? What is the source of I that sees all these things? Remember, all this phenomena is a projection of your mind. The mind appears to be very powerful. It projects voids, lights, sounds, images, as well as the entire universe, and as well as your body and mind. It projects itself as mind. The idea is to stop the projection. And you stop the projection through self-inquiry. This is the fastest way. So whenever you have some experience, go beyond the experience. Because there has to be somebody to have the experience. Just like the eyes see when it's light, and the eyes are still there when it's dark. So the eye is present when you sleep. The eye is present when you dream. The eye is present when you're awake. Find out who the eye is. Dive deep within. Work on yourself. Just like the article we read just before, forget about the world, forget about others, forget about your body, and inquire of the self. Find out who the self is. Who are you? Are there two eyes or one eye? There can't possibly be two eyes because that's duality. There has to be one eye only. Find the source of the eye. Follow it diligently until you merge with the source. Then you will find that you're happier than you've ever been in your life. When you touch the source of I, you have bliss. You have absolute reality. You have God. This is the most important quest you have. Nothing else is so important. Can you think of anything else that is important? Then why do you worry so much about others? Why do you get mixed up with all kinds of problems? Do your duty. Inquire. find the source of I. It doesn't make any difference how long it takes. Think of how many incarnations you had to go through in order to be in this class today. Make yourself happy. Forget about your troubles. They don't exist. Only God exists as yourself. But you must find it out for yourself. Do it. I don't want to keep on talking about different subjects. We've covered some very interesting topics this afternoon. And I'm sure you have many questions concerning these things. So let's talk about what we've covered and see where we go.
Robert, do you know the emphasis on non-efforting, that it will all happen, it's all predestined, but you know, you talk about making that effort to locate the I.
Yes.
Is it possible that that would be an unfolding destiny anyway?
Whoops.
So, but the only effort then is to look. Then we do have to do something, or is it an illusion that we have to do something?
No. The only freedom we have is to turn within. The only freedom we have is to make the effort not to react to any condition. That's the freedom we've got. Everything else is preordained. So when you're involved in any circumstance, it makes no difference what it is. Your freedom is not to react by realizing that the circumstance is preordained. By not reacting, you put a stop to your karma. You end it once and for all. And then you turn within and become totally free. So that's the only time that we get freedom. Everything else is spirit then. Well, yeah, I know. If you're not supposed to do that, you will not be able to. If you're supposed to unfold by sitting back, you will do it. If you're not supposed to do it, if it's not your karma, no matter how you try, you will not be able to do it. So don't worry about that question.
It alleviates all the worry about, even if you're active or whatever you are, it's just that, I mean, I look at it positively, that if you just realize it is all predestined, you can go through it, enjoy it like a film that you're watching, really.
But again, remember, it's not your business. It's God's business, what you're going to go through. In other words, you can't say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. The only thing you can do is to turn within and seek reality. Everything else will be taken care of for you. Everything else is ordained. In a way, but we really have a choice. That's the freedom we've got, to react or not to react.
But if our own self-realization itself is preordained through the process of not reacting, then the not reacting is also preordained.
In a way, you're right. But your job is to think about not reacting. When you think about it, you're using your mind for the right purpose by not reacting.
Using the mind to turn off the mind.
Yes. And let the Puritan take care of the rest.
So in a way it's Puritan, but in a way it's kind of freedom.
Correct. In other words, we're not to think that turning within is also preordained. We're to turn within and forget about everything else. That's the best way. And not to say, well, I don't have to turn at all because I'm supposed to, I will. Do not think this way. Do not ask too many questions to yourself about this. But simply turn within and do the work that's necessary. And everything else will take care of itself.
There's some new people here today. So what do you mean by turning within? Because everybody on the yogic path is turning within, and they're still all the ego turning in on itself, or is it
by turning within, I mean turning within on your eye. You say to yourself, who am I? Or what is the source of the I? And you hold on to the answer, the source. You hold on to it. And you follow it through to the end. As you turn within this way, you will know what to do to take the very next step. You will be guided and led. But don't get all worked up about this. Simply turn within, and we can say that God will take care of the rest. And the only way you turn within is by inquiring, who am I? What is the source of the I? And you follow the I thread to the source. If nothing happens, you keep repeating the question over and over again. Who am I? Who am I? Something will finally happen.
Robert, you said that there's always an experiencer experiencing the light, sound, or void. But when realization occurs and there is Satchitananda, existence, consciousness, bliss.
Satchitananda? New York accent.
So who experiences and omnipresence? Who is it that experiences that realization, that love bliss?
The mind originally experiences it. But then the mind turns within itself, and the mind is totally wiped out. So there's no one to experience anything. You just become it.
And that's the difference between temporary realization and permanent, probably.
Yes. You become Satchitananda. You become absolute reality.
Is that your present condition?
My present condition is nothing.
You're so nosy. Why not?
I have no present condition. Only what you say. What do you say? What you see is what you get.
I don't
know
about
the
Robert sitting in that chair.
Then that's what you got.
That's good enough. I like him.
Well, enjoy him. Enjoy him while you can.
Yeah, he doesn't look like he'd be around.
You can never tell.
You're on your way out too, sweetheart. It's a matter of time.
Ha ha ha.
whatever you see. We have 30 people or so here today. Everyone looks at me and sees something else. And what you see is what you get.
But that's your appearance, Robert. That's not your central reality.
Well, who tells you to see my appearance? That's up to you.
I see an unoccupied body.
Well, then you're seeing yourself. That's yourself. There's only one self. And wherever you look, you see it. Because you are the self of all. You look out the window, you see mountains, a lake, a tree. You're seeing yourself. That's all you can ever see, yourself. So if you turn within and stop looking out there or stop looking at people, you will find something else completely. You will find that you are spirit, that you are ultimate intelligence, ultimate oneness, absolute reality, nirvana. And then when you look, you will see consciousness everywhere. When you become consciousness, then you can see consciousness wherever you look. And you will know all as well. But if you still believe you are the body-mind phenomena, wherever you look, you're going to see a body. You're going to see a healthy body or a sick body or all kinds of bodies. A fat body, a skinny body, a tall body, a small body, a female body, a male body. And you'll see nothing but bodies. Because you think that you are the body. Get rid of the notion that you are the body. Experience consciousness. And you will see bliss wherever you look.
Robert, can we say that going within is the same as giving up the center?
Giving up the center?
Giving up the me,
the center. Oh, if you mean the me, of course. When you're going within, you're inquiring, who is me? Not what is me. But who is me?
Most people take their center as their ego.
Most people cry, woe is me, all day long. But see, let most people take the center as their ego. What do you take? That's the question. Don't worry about most people.
Because the reason I'm saying that, because when you say go within, people tend to cling and clutch to their ego as their center because they're so identified with it.
But why are you worried what people do? Let them clutch and let them hang on and let them do whatever they want.
Because the spiritual path I used to be on would say go within, and there are 3,000 people going within for 100 years, and they're just hung up with the ego. So I think giving up the center is more precise way of saying, you know,
then give up the center, give it up, make it happen.
Yeah, lay it down.
Do it. Let the 3,000 people do what they do.
Robert, when you say go within by means of self-inquiry, asking, who am I, the purpose is not really to find the I, but the purpose is to quiet the mind, which can also be done by devotion or negation. So if you get caught up in the process of trying to find out who am I, like there's an I that needs that I need to find, and not trying to stop the mind and just let it manifest of itself, you're kind of missing the point.
the mind appears to be very strong in some people. So the mind is another word for the I, the personal I. And we find the easiest way is self-inquiry, where you find out the source of this I or the mind. As you investigate the source of the I, the mind becomes quieter and quieter and quieter until it disappears altogether. Because the I is really the mind, the personal I. They're both the same. Self-inquiry is therefore the fastest way to quiet the mind. The fireplace agrees with me. The fastest way to quiet the mind is to search for the I. Because the I is the mind. And when you discover that the I is the self, there's no more mind. Then you have transcended the mind automatically. That's the easiest way.
And the I is the self coming on like it where it was.
Yes. The I is really the self. The I is consciousness. But you've individualized it. So because you've individualized it, you've got to observe it in action and follow it to the source, which is the self. As soon as you experience the self, there's no longer any mind, and there's no longer anything else, because the self.
Sure is simple. Why does it seem to be difficult?
To whom is it difficult? You make it difficult because you think it's difficult.
Who are you referring to?
Whoever thinks it's difficult. Sure is it. Simply look at yourself, make it easy, discover who you are, and be done with it. Awaken and become free.
Then you see nothing but the self wherever you look.
Everything becomes the self. Everything is consciousness. Of course. Well, why would we go after it?
It doesn't even really become the self. You just recognize what's really there, and that's the self.
What's really there is the self, consciousness.
So it doesn't become the self.
No, that's true indeed. Nothing becomes anything. The self has always been. And always will be. Everything else is an illusion.
Just wake up to what you already and always are.
Wake up. Do it.
No. Well, I will. Don't worry.
When?
Don't push me.
When will you do it?
What's your hurry? What's the rush?
I've been waiting for you to do it and get rid of yourself.
Become a nobody.
It's occurring. It's occurring. Have patience.
Become the nobody you really are.
Patience.
Robert, I know you don't like this kind of question.
Sure I do. I don't care what you ask.
When you finally, say that you do finally reach that point of the void and all and understanding, can you carry into that a curiosity as to why creation manifested in the ways it did, or which appeared, even if it is an illusion? Do you sort of get behind the understanding of maybe the scheme behind why it manifested to so many souls that are living in illusion the way it did?
Well, let me ask you a question. If you become self-realized, who is left to do that? There's nobody left to ask that kind of a question. Only the mind asks a question like that. The self has no question.
I'd like to come back and sort of tell my mind what it was about.
You can't.
It'll be an endless search.
The mind has been annihilated. there's no mind to come back to. You will understand that you are the self, you've always been the self, and that's it. There's no...
I understand that, but I just have sort of a curiosity before I pass into this stage.
Who has the curiosity?
My mind.
And that'll be wiped out, so you won't have the curiosity.
Before it is, I would like somebody to tell me, even if it's just kind of indulging this, why it manifested in the form that it did with all the, you know, the creatures and different platforms. And it was fascinating.
Who said it did?
Well, it's just my mind sort of was...
See, as long as your mind is active, the world becomes real to you. And everything manifests, people, places, and things. But once the mind is gone, so is everything else. And those questions become redundant. There will be no question. There will be nobody left to ask that question.
I'll never know the answer.
No, on the contrary. You only wanted the answer because you're not enlightened. But once self-realization ensues, you will not care a darn about these things.
Yeah.
It'll be different.
Sort of until that time.
Until that time, work on yourself, go within, and find out. Then come and tell me.
If I can put it in an envelope and hide it somewhere.
You will not be interested.
I can imagine that.
Robert? I want to ask you something about some unexpected things that have taken place lately for me since meeting you and since practicing. I find myself actually more emotional, which, like watching a movie, I feel very emotionally involved in it. Seeing someone suffering, I have tears come to my eyes when I see someone. And it's taken me by surprise because I felt, you know, I feel like if I'm going, at least I felt, as if I'm going in the direction of non-duality, I shouldn't feel these things.
On the contrary, those are high signs. What you're really doing is you're bringing all your samskaras up to the front. See, all of our samskaras, all of our karmas, perhaps the karma and everything else, is inside of our subconscious mind as dormant seeds. And they sprout in many lifetimes. But if somebody is really sincere on the path, everything comes up at one time. And you start to get all these feelings. Because you're getting rid of everything at once.
You know, it actually doesn't feel bad. It just feels intense.
Yes, I know. It's all coming out. It's all draining out of you. So that's really a good sign. Just watch it. Don't interfere with the process. Watch.
It's interesting because I feel like the teaching I was in before wouldn't allow any of that. Wouldn't allow any of that. Feeling, because that's not right to have feeling. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I don't know where you were before, but the feelings are great. Follow them, watch them, inquire to whom they come, and see what happens.
Well, but carry the same question a little further. Would that all your plans to negatives, would one become more greedy and more lustful?
It's possible, but that's only a temporary condition. Again, we have all these samskaras, these latent tendencies from past lives inside of us. And as we get in a spiritual path like this, we're making them all come up. You have to imagine it's like a shooting gallery. And you've got a gun. As one duck comes up, you shoot it down. So as one thought comes up, one fear, one frustration, you shoot it down by asking, to whom does it come? You get rid of that one, another one will come up just as fast. You shoot that one down. It keeps going, going, going until they're all gone. So you keep inquiring, to whom does it come? To whom does it come? and your mind will become empty soon and you'll be free.
Like in watching a movie, should one not get involved in the movie, or just keep inquiring to the movie, or let yourself get involved and let...
When you watch a movie, you have no choice what's going to happen. Depending on your spiritual state, you will act accordingly. If I watch a movie, I see the screen, which is consciousness, and I realize that the movie is simply images superimposed on the screen. If I try to get up and grab the image on the movie, I'll grab the screen. So I'm already aware of the screen, while other people are aware of the figures. So if you're aware of the figures, you still have a long way to go. But if you're able to see through the figures to the screen, then you're identifying with consciousness. I think you're trying to roast me, Henry. For Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Sacrificial love.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Roasted consciousness.
Yeah, we need to serve you after the meeting.
We're looking for that certificate.
We started.
Robert, does that apply to frustrations and resentments and all the negative?
It applies to everything. Everything uses the same method.
Yeah.
They kind of come up, it's up to you to get rid of them. By inquiring, to whom do they come? To whom do they come? And if that gets too difficult, surrender it all to God. Give it all to God. And be happy. In other words, say, take this from me, God, it's yours. Take it off my hands. And feel free as if you did. You'll be okay.
The inquiry to whom do they come seems very similar to the injunction to be the witness.
It is similar to that. It is similar, but it's a faster method.
Why is that?
Because when you inquire to whom do they come, the mind explodes within itself. And it becomes weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. Faster.
It's more active, right? Rather than
passive. Yes. So the mind disappears faster by asking the question. But witnessing is good also.
Robert? Some of the Vedanta people say, you know, they talk about their feeling of difference with the psychological people who say there's a subconscious mind and these things are actually stored somewhere, you know, and I guess you'd say the samskaras would, that's the illusion in a sense that we have to penetrate, isn't it, that there is a storehouse of these latent tendencies and it could explode at any moment.
There's really no storehouse, but for the sake of those who have to do something, you explain that there's a storehouse of tendencies to get rid of. But there's really nothing to get rid of. Because it doesn't exist and never did. Only consciousness exists. But if you want to discuss it further, we tell you that there's a storehouse of tendencies to get rid of. Open the storehouse and then we'll fly out. But let's face it, you are free already, and there's nothing binding you except your own belief system. Stop your mind from thinking, you'll be safe.
Would that be a way of, in a certain sense, seemingly speeding up the inquiry to get closer to the source of the ideas, you know, that idea that there is a latent storehouse or a subconscious mind, rather than, like, deal with one latent tendency as it, you know, at a time as it appears to arise.
It depends on the seeker. It depends what your background has been. Why look at the tendencies of storehouses? Why look at anything? Just go within. Ask yourself, to whom did I come? Follow the eye. Go to the source and be free. That's all you have to do.
That's more direct.
Yeah.
Go straight to the point.
Go straight to the point. Which is yourself.
Couldn't you just even skip the point of asking to whom does this or that come and just follow the eye?
If you can do that, that's fine. You don't even have to do that. Why not just awaken? Wake up right now. It's up to you. It's up to each individual. What path you're going to take.
Like surrender. If you just give everything up and there's nothing there, then you don't even have to do inquiry, right?
That's right.
You see that there's nothing there.
That's right. If you can do that, do it. Do whatever you have to do, but by all means do something.
And if you see that doing is an undoing, then you don't do that.
That's right. You do. You're doing whatever you have to do at the moment. And everything changes accordingly.
If you see the doing is the undoing, then you don't even do it.
If you can see it, that's good. But can you see it? Then stay with it. We'll play another song. The power of silence is the greatest teacher in the universe. There's nothing greater than the power of silence. Things actually happen in the silence that would never happen anywhere else and by any other method. So let's keep silent for a while and find out for ourselves. Shanti Nam, peace, peace. When I sit like this at home in the chair for hours, people ask me if I'm meditating. And the answer is no. For to meditate, you have to have a subject and an object. And that implies duality. But if there's nobody home, there's no subject and there's no object. So you're not meditating. So people ask, well, do you go into samadhi? Who's left to go into samadhi? There has to be somebody left over to go into samadhi. That also implies an object and a subject. Wipe out the object and the subject, and you'll become nobody. So what do? You just stay in the silence. You do nothing. There's nothing to do. People always believe they've got to do something. When there's nothing to do, it sounds too easy. But when you're doing something, meditating, going into the samadhi, there has to be a doer. You are not a doer. You are nobody. You are absolute reality. Pure consciousness. Ultimate oneness. Satchitananda. I am that I am. And this is your true nature. Awaken to it. Anyone have any other questions? questions or forever hold your peace. Okay, remember to love yourself, to bow to yourself, to worship yourself, to honor yourself, because God dwells in you as you. Have a happy Christmas. I love you. Be happy. Peace. And that's all she wrote.